Welcome to Moot Point, the Swedish War Machine and Hordes podcast. Moot Point is sponsored by Iron Moot, the greatest War Machine and Hordes convention in the Nordics. Hello and welcome to the podcast. My name is Jukka.
And I'm Christopher. And today we're going to talk to Mr. Will Pagani. Hello.
Hello. How's it going, guys?
It's good. It's good.
How's everything with you?
It's beautiful, man. The weather up here is pretty crazy for me. I'm coming from Texas. I just moved to Seattle to work at Privateer Press. It's been below freezing for the past, like, week and a half, which would happen to, like, one day a year in Texas. So it's been pretty cold up here for me.
It's your new life now. You have to learn to embrace the snow.
It doesn't snow too much up here. It mostly just rains and then freezes.
Oh, it's
just not the best.
It's Gothenburg weather.
Yeah, it sounds like our town all year round.
Yep.
You know, cold rain, learn to love it, or just never go outside.
Yep. That's our plan.
Never go outside really well in Texas, so we'll probably apply it here as well.
Sounds good. So, maybe not all of our listeners know who you are. Do you mind telling us a little bit about yourself? Maybe about your gaming career and rise to fame?
Well, thank you for the time. But I started my own game store back in 2008 in Houston, Texas. And I had been playing competitive War Machine since before that. I did a ton of traveling in the stateside events, winning a bunch of national events, Masters, and Hardcore events. Most of my competitive play happened before Iron Gauntlet existed, so I didn't particularly like the format for Iron Gauntlet originally, so I didn't play too much Iron Gauntlet. But I won WTC 2 years ago, I think.
Yep.
The one in Poland, whichever one that was. It all blends together at this point.
It's one big sauna party.
Exactly.
So you pretty much won tournaments with every faction, almost, it seems like.
I don't know if I have a count directly in front of me, but I think at least five different factions I've won a Masters, at least with, at a national level Masters, like of at least 100 people. Yeah, that's probably a rec number. It might be more, it might be less, by one or two, but that's ish. So I own at least three painted 75-point armies for every faction except for Minoth and Minions.
Wow. It's like
first you said, I own three armies, and I asked, yeah, that's pretty similar to me. And I asked, for each faction?
For each faction except for those two. So I play everything and do all that kind of stuff. And about 2 months ago now, I got hired on by Privateer Press as the development assistant, which essentially is a playtest job. So I work with the other developers, which are Jason Souls, Oz Schoonover, Will Hungerford, to make models, essentially, and balance old models and help them develop all the new theme forces, errata, all the documents for all that kind of stuff, is what I do here.
All right, and you've been at PP for a month?
A little less than 2 months.
A little less than two, all right. So how does it feel to work at PP?
It's really fun, honestly. Like, as someone who has played thousands of games of War Machine, like, it's great because I get to come in every day and then sit down at my desk and answer some emails about some stuff that's coming out, and then we just kind of talk about it. Like we'll pull up new models that are coming out. Like, we think this is too good, we don't think this is good enough. We'll talk about model interactions and everything inside the office. Sort of have like little impromptu meetings all the time. Like, what do you think about Strakov 2, who just got announced yesterday? I want to say at the time of recording this podcast. And we'll just talk about stuff, and that's great. And then I'll go to lunch, I'll come back, and then I have playtest the entire second half of the day, I just get to play the War Machine.
Is it like a scientific process where you get lots of data and weigh in all the variables and then decide with changes, or is it more of an arts thing where you do something that feels good? If you understand
well,
what
I think
I mean.
The discussions that we have in the mornings most days are certainly a lot about feeling and about what we think is fun, what we think is entertaining, what we want to see in factions, what directions they want to go. And then the second half of the day when we start playtesting, that's when a lot of the math will come into it. Like, oh man, this model compared to another model that's similar is this point cost versus that point cost, and they have these rules. Like, do we feel like that's correct, or do we not feel like that's correct? And then we kind of will try to evaluate the point costs of things based on what they have that way. And there are definitely some spreadsheets floating around that have ridiculously complicated algorithms and them and stuff to try and assign point values to things.
Yeah. Do you compare models across factions for point cost and abilities? Because I've heard different things about this.
A little bit. And this is something that I've said a million times before I worked here, is that it's very difficult to compare models cross-faction because there's different things in every faction. And those things will get brought up in arguments, but there's always the caveat, like, but this is in Signar, or but this is in Kador. So, like, different factions pay different points for different things because they have different rules inside of those factions. So because... I don't know, Trenchers and Venators are similar in their ranged, often stats, does not mean they should be the same points or the same type of unit.
I want to go back a little bit to what you guys do all day, because I think that's the, I mean, it's the secret. I think a lot of people who play this game have some kind of dream at one point about joining a games development company, a big company.
Sure.
I mean, from what you say, it feels like you spend all of your time with just playtesting and talking about models. Is it really that way, or is a lot of time spent dealing with people on forums or administrative tasks and so on?
Well, it's definitely not all that way. That's sort of the dream aspect of this job, where I get to hang around and just talk about War Machine and play War Machine. But there's a lot of time, like I'm sure you guys have noticed, that I've been doing a lot of community stuff on both the forums and on Facebook, and I'm starting to get into Reddit for that one. just talking to people. Like, hey, I'm sorry, this isn't what you want, your feedback's been heard, or this is why we did this on the forums, and that kind of stuff. So there's certainly a lot of community parts of it as well. And then, of course, there's the boring kind of desk job kind of stuff, where you got to go to meetings about marketing, and you got to go read through proofing edits for the books and the cards and all that stuff. And I know we've had a lot of people kind of wondering why it takes so long to get an errata out, for example. Like, the Scorn errata isn't out yet. And people are like, why is this taking so long? Well, this is a... I don't remember the exact page number. It's around 10 pages for the Scorn errata right now. And that has to go through... So we had to write it originally. Then it has to go through the editing process, where they fix all of our grammar, because we're game developers, not English majors. So they fix all that stuff. And then the editing department will standardize all of the wording for things, and we'll work with them on that, so that, like, if we have a typo in our shield guard rule or whatever, they'll find that as compared to the original shield guard rule and fix it. So, and then they have to make sure that that's our intention. Okay. So it goes back and forth a couple times.
So do you actually, so for like the shield guard rule, do you actually write the whole shield guard rule each time? You don't just write shield guard and then have
usually
some,
you get copy. Usually it'll get copy pasted, but as we keep changing things, like, we have a database of everything. So, like, the shield guard rule is standardized in there. But as we change things, sometimes, like, a line break will happen in a weird place, or there will be a typo that gets accidentally put in there or something. So they have to go through and make sure that all those rules are still correct.
Yep.
With the correct wording and everything. So after that happens, and that's usually two or three passes through development, between those. And then we also have, like, the layout guys, right? So they have to make it into a PDF from a Word document. They have to make it look pretty for you guys. They have to do all that stuff. Then it comes back to us for proofing again. Like, did the layout guys put a random capital P in the middle of a word? Was one of the things we just found. Like, because they're just clicking on stuff, right? And they accidentally put in a letter. Yeah. So it has to go through all of these things. And these things take a lot of man hours. So that's why these things take a long time. Because you can't just, like... I mean, I guess we could just save a Word document as a PDF and then send that out to you guys, but that wouldn't be very professional.
No, I'm happy that you guys put the extra effort into making everything look unique, united theme, and everything looks professional. But I was thinking about what you said with man hours. How many people work in your department compared to the... Or how many efficient hours are spent on development each day, basically?
So the development... This is five people, and all of us are full-time. And then we have one part-timer as well. So that would be, what is that, 220 hours a week?
Yeah.
And between everyone?
Yeah, and is people like Will Chick, he's not part of development team, or is he?
No, he's not. He does business development, which is more like what models to make and how production works and all that kind of stuff. But he is a playtester for us, so some of his afternoons will be spent coming in and playing War Machine and playtesting with us.
Okay. So can you have ideas for a new model, or does that come from above, that you get, these are the new models you will have, and then you decide
it's
on...
It's above your pay grade.
Yeah.
as the assistant, it's definitely above my pay grade right now.
But
I don't get to create the ideas for new models.
And I guess new models are decided, you have a very long time horizon for that? If I understand correctly from previous interviews, I mean, you don't decide the new models that are released the coming 6 months. They were made a long time ago.
Correct, yeah. So, like, all of the command books, all of them? No, I guess only, I think it might be all of them are already finished and have gone to print. So there's nothing that, like, since I've worked here, that I can really change in those books. Because they're all already done, basically. So they have to go through all those processes that we just talked about. And you can't really change too much while they're going through editing and layout and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, we plan very far ahead in the future.
So this maybe goes into one of the new changes that you make to the development process, that you will remove the cards and have online rules?
Yes. Yeah. So one of the, I'm not going to say problems necessarily, but one of the issues that that we have is because we had to put, or yeah, I guess had to, and for the slight future here, have to put the model entries into books, and those take so long to produce and print and get ready for shipping to distributors and shipping out to you guys, is we don't have as much development time for these things. So by going into this community integrated development system that we're going to start, I want to say in early March is going to be the first set with the new faction that gets spoiled at SmogCon, is that we don't, like, we get more time, basically. Because we don't have to print all of these materials for these models, we can give them to you guys at about the same time that the solicitations go out to retailers for them to buy them. We can give you what we have for the full rules of those models.
Yeah.
And so then you guys can playtest those models and try them and give feedback on them and do that kind of stuff. And that to me is super exciting. I think that's great. One, it brings you guys in, right? Like, it involves you guys at a very base level. What you want to see in your faction and that kind of stuff, like, you get to influence that, and that's really cool to me.
I think it's very good for the game to be able to do that, to have, I mean, at the very least, you don't need to have a model with rules that has to be changed in a short while because something was omitted or something was missed, something very obvious. You get to at least clean out all of those stuff. I think it's a very good thing. And then hopefully it can lead to better model balances. But are you guys worried about the amount of feedback and all the stuff you need to wade through?
So we haven't 100% nailed down how we're going to take feedback yet. But I'll tell you right now, it's going to be very structured. So we have the current plan, and once again, this might change. So don't give me the Hungerford or Will Schick treatment where you're like, you said this, and this is how it is. No,
we're never going to do that, Will.
Would never happen from our community.
Absolutely.
But currently the plan is, essentially, there's an online form that you're going to fill out for each model. And just to give a little bit more details on how this is going to work, we're going to give chunks of models for testing at a time. The majority of them will be new models. There will be some old models included inside of that stuff. So just as an example, the Trencher's Imports book that we've announced is coming out later this year. We will give you all of the models that are in that theme force. So you'll get all of the new Trencher models, and then you'll get all of the old Trencher models. And essentially, you'll get, I don't think we're going to do all of the Warcasters for every theme force that we do, but we will probably do the ones that we think are relevant to that theme force. So, I mean, I'm just kind of spitballing here. Don't take this for anything. Yeah, yeah. But, like, let's say we give you all the Haleys, all the Canes, all the Sieges, and all of the whatever.
Okay, that's really interesting. I hadn't realized that we would get to test old models as well. Then people can finally, people can finally have the, you know, Trencher Commandos are way worse than Trencher Infantry discussion.
We'll exactly. So, like, if you guys don't like where Trencher Commandos are, you can give us ideas for what you think should change about Trencher Commandos to make them better.
That's very cool.
To compound on that one little bit more, we're also going to give you, like, let's say you get, I don't know, five more models from other factions during the Trencher testing. And what that'll do is it'll engage people that don't necessarily want to test Trenchers. So let's say we give you two models that we think are overpowered or are too good or are currently performing higher than we want them to perform. And then we give you three to five more models that are underperforming, that are just from other factions besides Signar.
So basically you want the community to test the entire game all the time, but you only want you decide what you want feedback on specifically. Because we won't be able to send in if you have like these things that you said, the Trencher stuff, and someone really wants to tell you something about Storm Lances, for example.
Sure.
Nothing personal.
No. Then they will have to wait until the proper time to talk about how to boost them or buff them or nerf them. They're underperforming right now. I think they're cool.
Yeah, so through that, if we open it up to every model in the entire game always, there would just be an avalanche of feedback that would be way too much for us to effectively read through and really process. So by limiting it, we can say, hey, this is what we're looking at, make these better, make these worse, give us feedback, make them different, like that kind of thing. Though I will say, when we do give new models, we are also going to give a concept brief on those models. So like, let's say we gave you Manowar Shock Troopers, right?
Yeah.
Like way, way, way back. Go infinitely back to Manowar Shock Troopers. And we said, Manowar Shock Troopers, we want these to be slow. We want them to be high-powered, low-attack melee attacks, and we want them to be very durable. And if you came back, well, I think it would be really cool if they had jetpacks and could fly everywhere and were really mobile and had awesome guns. Looking at that kind of feedback.
Was that a spoiler for a coming unit?
Absolutely not.
No, but I think that's a very good idea. Do you think that you might actually have those kind of things for existing models? Because I think it would help with feedback somehow, and if people... I mean, some models are played in a certain way and perform in a certain way on a battlefield, but that might not be what you guys actually intended for the models.
Yes, I think every single model that comes out for development, well, probably not every single, I don't want to say that, because I don't know if we're going to do it for everything. Like Trencher Infantry, right? Like if we did the Trencher theme for us, I'm pretty sure everybody knows what Trencher Infantry you're supposed to do. But we will probably give those kind of briefs for the majority of models that are in those
I think especially for Warcasters, it could be very beneficial.
Warcasters are something that we're really, I'm not going to say scared of doing for this, but they're incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
And they all have very set themes and very set ideas behind them. And I think a lot of people will have a hard time wrapping their head around that theme and how that plays into what we want them to do. So the feedback from Warcasters, I think, is really tough for us to go through because there's so much of an idea inside of a Warcaster, and there's so many moving parts that becomes very difficult.
So will you have some way to filter the feedback, or I don't know, depending on how much feedback someone gives, or level of feedback in some way?
Yeah, so all of those options with our current system that we're looking at kind of get fed into a spreadsheet, and then we can organize and search from there. The kind of questions that you're going to get asked are like, have you played a game with this model? Yes. Give me a link to the battle report that you put in our feedback forums. Do you not have a battle report? Cool. Give me your army list. So we can see what you're doing and that kind of stuff. And how it's all going, what you played against, is all going to be part of what's going on with this.
Will there be some level of how long have you played this game? Have you played in tournaments or things like that?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you have to make a profile essentially on the webpage that has all of that information in it.
So you'll know who's the trolls and who's the... and so on.
And we're expecting people to be truthful here, right? Like, we don't want someone that's been playing for a month saying, oh, I've been playing for 10 years and I got third place at some tournament and, like, all this kind of stuff, right? Like, we don't want that. And I hope that people will be truthful answering those questions. That newer player feedback is also incredibly important to us, right? Because we're trying to make the best, most interesting, most fun game that we can while also remaining a competitive game that has very tight rules and can be played at very large tournaments. Both types of feedback are very important, and I'm not even going to say that one is more important than the other. Like, I think they're both equally important.
Yeah, of course, but it's very important to know which feedback is which as well.
Absolutely,
That sounds really good. So how much time do you expect to, like, how much of your playtest time will you use to look through the community feedback, do you think?
I would imagine that would, kind of as I described my day earlier, I would imagine that would be more of a morning procedure than an evening procedure. So I will still be playing games, and Jack is another one of the guys in development. He is currently he does all of our external playtesting and stuff, so he and I are going to be the ones really going through that, I think, and compiling feedback and making reports to give to the other developers, like Souls or Harper. There are also 5 people that work here whose first name is Will.
Is that part of the reason why you got the job, you think?
I mean, there are 3 Wills in the same office room for development, so yes, I do.
Yeah.
Change your name to Will.
It's a prerequisite for working at PP.
Will this new job, how do you see, or how have you felt that this affects your play experience with the game itself? Do you play as much outside of work as before? Can you still play in tournaments and so on?
So I haven't been able to play outside of work yet because I haven't unpacked all of my furniture and stuff, and all of my armies are with all of my furniture. So I haven't been able to play outside of work yet, which is unfortunate because I would really like to. There's some really cool game stores up here. As far as how I play or how I address the game, I don't think much has changed. Like I'm still up here building lists and everything and trying to play things that I think that I would have taken to tournaments and stuff before this, playtesting that against other stuff and other people.
Yeah.
So that's great. I am officially allowed to play in tournaments, but I cannot receive any prizes of any kind, essentially.
But you can. You would be allowed to play in, like, qualify for a Masters Finals and so on, if you were to
I haven't asked that question yet. like, is the qualification a prize? I don't know. I haven't asked.
If you were, for example, to come to a tournament in Sweden, you would be allowed to play in the tournaments here.
Correct, yes.
Just as an example.
Yeah.
Yep.
As an example of Iron Mood, perhaps.
Yes.
Yeah, perhaps, maybe.
Which I would love to come to. I would love to come to. So yeah, we're going to see if that's possible.
That would be awesome. You've grown accustomed to the weather now, so you know what to expect. It's actually above freezing in the summer.
It is. And we have a pool.
Crazy. You have a pool and it's freezing. No. Why? It was heated.
That's normal. That's normal. You don't have that in Texas.
No, we do not have heated pools.
You're working on the erratas as well, right? So there will be two erratas each year. I've heard some different things about that.
Let me actually stop you there. We are not necessarily doing two erratas a year.
Ooh.
So let me tell you exactly what that means.
Yes.
Is with the new dynamic update system that we're starting with the development stuff that we're doing, so in March is when all this kicks off, is things will be errated if they have to be errated. We will try to push the fewest number of errates as possible every year. Still don't want to go errata crazy and change everything, right? Like, that's not our goal here. We want the things that we release to be the things that we release, and then that's how they stay. If something has to change, like it's destroying the game, we will change it if it has to be changed. Now, if I had to guess, there will probably still be two large errata documents every year, but they will be mostly full of clerical changes. So things like Minutemen hit themselves with flak field when they flak field. That one can wait till June.
Okay. Basically, you might release minor erratas after each playtest cycle then.
Correct.
Let's say, for example, the Trencher Command book we talked about. So when you when you decide to release it, you might at the same time say, oh, and by the way, you guys tested Siege and Striker, and these are the changes to them as well.
Like, correct, Or any of those other models that we gave you. Like, let's say we picked Deliverers, and you guys came up with some really cool ideas for Deliverers and how they could be made better. We put those in there as well.
So basically, the erratas are going to work on cycles, just like the theme releases. So we know what to expect to be errated in the near future, and we know they're going to be like chunks of errata packages almost.
I'm not going to commit us to anything
no.
structured, but we want to stay very fluid with it, right? We don't want to say this is the time that the errata is going to come out and this is what's going to be in it and that kind of stuff. We want to be able to change things on the fly as we need to. And we hope to never need to because of these community development things. We hope that we're going to get an incredible amount of great feedback from you guys, from the communities, and then we can combine that with our internal playtesting. And then that will catch the majority, if not all, of the problems that come up. But if something does slip through, we want to be able to fix it quickly and effectively and not have to worry about it. And that's important to us because then people don't end up with all these mad dogs that we had to change, that we had to wait several months to change because this is when we announced it was going to happen, right? And a lot of people feel very upset because they bought all these models and then we changed them. We don't want that. We want people to buy the models they want to buy, and we want them to be able to play with the models that they bought.
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes you will have to change old models when you release new ones because there is some combo that you might not expect or you really need this Warcaster solo to be in some way, but that means that you have to change another model, because otherwise it will be unbalanced.
Absolutely. And those things will happen. Like, we're not going to say that we're not going to change old models, because that's insane. Like, we can't do that, right? Like, we can't paint ourselves into that corner. But we want to do it as little as possible is our goal.
Yeah.
We want the models that you buy to stay the models that you buy, and we want to have to errata the smallest number of models possible. And we don't want it to go for very long periods of time where something is broken or something is overpowered, and then have to do that kind of stuff.
I think that's a good way of working with it. I'm happy to hear that you guys are willing to make changes as soon as they need to be made. But maybe we should we talk a little bit about the latest errata? Because I'm thinking you talked about long cycles before. How long what was the errata work started when you came on board, or was it almost finished when you came aboard, or how long did it take to do this errata?
So when we had the 6-month errata cycles, I mean, it would quite literally be like the week after an errata came out. If they wanted to change something else, they would have to wait for the 6 months to do that. So like the document would start back basically immediately after the previous errata. So like, okay.
So there's been changes that you are sure on will come, but and it's decided in August, but you have to wait until now December.
Exactly. And that's what we don't want to have to do anymore, because we don't want people to invest in these things for 6 months when we already know that we're going to change them. The errata was, yeah. The first errata was pretty much done by the time I got here. Like, I got some say in it, and I got to poke around a little bit and look through it, and we talked about it a little bit, but it was already into editing and into layout.
Yeah, because I think some people can consider some things maybe being rushed into errata. Is it possible for something to arise and then be quick fixed in a very short time? Would that ever happen? Or do you always have like some set cycles on, we have to make this amount of playtesting in order to release something?
I mean, everything that was in the errata was playtested.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
So there was... Is that true? I don't know if that's actually true. Like, I don't think we ever played... No, that's true. We always try and test everything that goes into everything that we do for the errata. So I'm trying to think. Well, I mean, I guess we never play tested like Minutemen, but once again, that was a clerical change,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
That kind of stuff. So no, I guess everything in the errata was not play tested, but all of the relevant changes to models were play tested. So
yeah, because you can feel, I guess,
do things added in right at the very end. Yes, but they still get tested. They still go through all of the vetting that everything else went through.
Because I think that some people could felt like, if you take the Mad Dog change again, felt like this was some kind of knee-jerk reaction. You know, this list has now won the War Machine Weekend and some tournaments before that. And then like, oh shit, we need to change this. And then we nerf everything about this model.
Sure, sure. Yeah, the Mad Dog changes, which is obviously what you're talking about, and the Karchev changes, I was not here for, so I can't comment on how that came about. But I will tell you that it happened before I got here, so it was at least 2 months ago.
Yeah, no, that is that is good to know.
Before one,
yeah, it must have been.
Yeah,
before
that was before one weekend.
Yeah, which makes it much less of a knee jerk reaction then.
Which makes it more our fault and less Chris' fault.
Yes.
That's awesome.
I mean, I'm sure the War Machine Weekend win didn't help. Like, didn't make the other developers feel sorry for the Mad Dogs at all. So
no. Yeah.
You're already nerfing Mad Dogs, and then you cut in on Karchev as well. No.
Oh no.
Poor guy.
If you go back to PP as a company, maybe. So you said that you are 5 people in your group. How big is the company? I have a difficult time in my head picturing the company. Like, how many employees do you have? Is it like a big office, or do you sit in some small room somewhere?
We are in an office building. Well, office building might be a stretch. We have 2 floors of a large office building / warehouse. So we have a really big warehouse and then a bunch of offices in part of an office building.
Okay. Yeah. How many are you in the office, approximately? I mean, is it like...
I'm not really sure. I guess somewhere around 75 to 100 people.
Okay. Yeah.
I have no basis for that number. That is just a pure guess. I have no idea if that's
accurate. Do the game, like, do the game developers and graphics people and model guys and fluff person sit together and talk about the game? Or is it like you have your own small little bubbles?
We definitely have bubbles, but there's definitely a lot of communication inside of each of the different departments in terms of what we want models to do. Because like I'm coming from the development side, right? So like when we get a concept for a model, I need to go talk to the fluff guys to be like, cool, well, what about this and this and this? And they're like, oh, well, they don't really do that, so how about this? And then they can kind of develop that way. And then the artist guys, of course, like if a dude has a giant sword, he probably needs to have reach, or I guess 2-inch melee, and reach doesn't exist anymore. But yeah, so like those discussions definitely do happen between those departments.
Yeah, that's interesting. So is the fluff decided for the model, or can you say that we really want this rule, so now can you change the fluff so he actually does that?
That hasn't come up since I've been here, but I wouldn't say that it's out of the realm of possibility, no.
Yeah, sure.
I think that could happen.
Yeah. You also developed the Steamroller packet for each
one. Yes, I've been helping Hungerford with that one.
Yeah, so is that done in parallel in the same way as you develop the models, or how is that process?
I mean, it's pretty similar. We do a lot of talking about it, and then in the afternoons we'll play test. So a lot of the times when we're testing models, we'll also be testing scenarios that could be possible for Steamroller.
Yeah.
So we kind of do both at the same time, essentially.
Okay.
And what did you say, is it just you and Hungerford who do the Steamroller?
I mean, it's mostly Hungerford, because he's the organized play developer is his title. So he comes up with a lot of the ideas for it, a lot of the concepts for it. He's the one that gives us the scenarios that we then go playtest during playtest and stuff. There's a lot of really cool stuff coming for Steamroller 2017.
All right.
So I can't say too much about it, because it's not all locked in. But there's some really big changes are coming in terms of way scenarios function inside of the game.
Oh,
okay.
And then, yeah. So that's... Be ready for big changes.
And this will be released...
There's some really, really interesting things.
This will be released at Lock and Load, or is that correct?
It should be shortly after Lock and Load. Like the week after, I want to say, is when the Steamroller stuff normally comes out.
Okay.
So, because we want to use the 2016 Steamroller for Lock and Load, because that's how the Iron Gauntlet seasons work. And then after that, the 2017 season will start with the new rules.
Yeah, I mean that it... probably gets spoiled at Lock and Load, maybe.
So, it very well might. Yes. It very well might. I'm not sure Hungerford's plans for that.
So, yeah, I think I heard the plan was that the 2016 Steamroller would be very similar to the last one, because you had a new edition, didn't want to change much. But now you're changing a lot, you say, for 2017.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the past few years have been been streamlining. I mean, 2015 was also pretty similar to 14 and 16 to 15 and so on.
Yeah.
So, but now you feel like you go the other way?
Well, we definitely don't want to increase complexity necessarily. So like a lot of the things got removed. Like if you remember back in the day, objectives would do things like make attacks, or they would affect the table in some large way. Like, I don't know if you guys remember, but I think it was 2014
had
the objective that would do like the big 5-inch AOE knockdown.
Yeah, you were the one you did choose.
That's not the direction. I'll tell you that right now.
And the snare is where you move the objective around. And
like that's all super complicated and really hard for newer players that are already being swamped down with hundreds of model rules to then learn how to move around an objective, right? Like that's not really the direction we want to go. Like, we don't really want to make things incredibly complicated. We want to make things where they're very simple, elegant, and promote gameplay that's fun and engaging, to use the company line, I guess. Like it's
I get paid to pay these.
And I guess, I get paid to say that. But so what we're focusing on in the new Steamroller is removing some of the feel bad situations from the 2016 Steamroller. And to give some examples of those, like, this goes back to Mark II, but things like playing Incursion, which is the three flag scenario against Denny II and Mark II, right? Like, that was just not fun. Nobody said, hooray, I get to play Incursion into Denny II.
No,
so we're trying to remove scenarios that cause that sort of feel,
so you mean that
making it very relevant.
Yeah, so you're saying that you're looking at Incursion?
We're looking at everything. We're looking at everything.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of changes in the works, and we're in a new edition of the game now, and we think that we can create a better Steamroller that promotes the type of play that we want to see in tournaments.
Yeah.
And that's where Hartford and I are right now.
Very nice. It would be really interesting to see what kind of thinking can happen outside of the box. Because I guess that's what you're saying. We're going to see big changes.
Yes.
I like Incursion. But it will.
I'm not saying that Incursion is changing or going away necessarily. Because we don't know where we are at the moment with that. But we're throwing around some really crazy ideas. And I think it's going to be really great when it's all done.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back, Steamroll Pack has looked very different in the past compared to then. It's very streamlined now with how you score and how many points you need to score and always the same deployment, things like that.
Yep, that's nice. we're not going to go back to radial deployment.
Wow, like, that's awesome.
That's not something we want. That's not something we want here. One of the things that we are doing that's very, very big, I think, that I am allowed to talk about is we are going to give significantly stricter guidelines to tournament operators or organizers, I guess, for how to place terrain on tables and where to put the terrain.
Okay.
And I think that will standardize things a lot between events. So when you go to a tournament, you can know that these are going to be the ways that terrain is on the table and you can plan for that.
Might this force tournament organizer to change their terrain? For example, some tournaments use a lot of terrain that has previously been used for other tabletop games that has large forests and so on that are maybe not suited for War Machine. Will you implement guidelines that encourage organizers to change the way that their terrain look, or how will it work?
We do have a section in there already that is suggestions for what the size of terrain features should be and how they should be shaped, things like that, yes. I want to say, and I think this is already in there, but, like, terrain features shouldn't be more than, like, a 6-inch square in general. And I mean, you can go a little bigger than that, right? Like, that's not a huge deal, but when you get, like, a 2-foot square building, like, this is obviously not going to work. So, yes, there is a little section in there about what the terrain should look like, as in how big it is and that kind of thing, not, like, what you want to paint, what color to paint your building. But
I think that's a very good step, at least from a tournament, competitive standpoint. When you go to tournaments, you definitely want it to be in a certain way, or you expect it to be in a certain way. It's always a problem when you build a list that you expect to see 9 terrain features on a table, and you go to a tournament and there's maybe 3 or 4 on each table.
Yeah, and yeah, that's kind of what I was touching on earlier, that it'll standardize, hopefully standardize everything between tournaments, so that when you go to a tournament in Texas, it'll be the same as it is in Boston, it'll be the same as it is in Sweden, or at the very least similar,
yeah,
if not exactly the same.
That's pretty cool.
I'm a fan of it. I think it's really good, because specifically in Texas, we had some tournaments where you would get very large area terrain, or like a river all the way across the middle of the board and stuff, and that's while it can be interesting for casual play, is not really something you want in tournament play.
No. We've had some
because
tournaments
you want like every table to be even, right?
Yeah, we've had some tournaments like that as well, which I remember.
And we've had another route as well. On Iron Moot last year, we had exactly identical terrain on all tables each round.
So we had a terrain map, basically, that was, this is how terrain should be set up in this scenario.
So will this be something similar to that? Like very, very much encouraging organizers to set up in a very specific way, maybe for certain scenarios, or is it more like better guidelines?
It's more like better guidelines. One of the things that we have to take into account when designing things like this or developing things like this is, for example, like if we give you, you have to put 2 buildings on this table. Like, let's say that was in your guide for this scenario, right?
Uh-huh.
And a tournament organizer gets 32 people that show up. That guy now needs 32 buildings, which he may or may not have. So by giving them guidelines instead of very strict, this is this, it allows it to be used by a lot more people.
Mm-hmm. But you said for a specific scenario, there might be specific guidelines then for specific scenarios in the new Steamroller.
It is possible. We have not got that far yet in terms of do we want to tie terrain setups to specific scenarios. That is not something that we have done. It may happen. I don't know. That would be up to Hungerford.
Okay. So how does playtesting for theme forces work? Do you put a lot of time into playtesting the Fiend Forces?
Yes, definitely. I would say that over half of the armies that I build for playtest are Fiend Forces.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you have a lot more to choose from than we do.
I do. I have significantly more than you guys have to choose from. Fiend Forces should have dropped by now, so you guys have missed
actually,
them.
The Fiend Forces dropped right now.
As we're recording this?
Yeah. That's
right. Excellent.
Yep.
So I'm not sure if we have time to look at them, but do you have any favorite Fiend Force of the new ones?
I really like the Krix one that came out today. I really, really like that one. It is a Revenant Pirate-based one.
Yes, that's like our favorite unit as well.
And I think it's really, really strong. I don't know if I can talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it anyway, and maybe have you guys cut it out if you want. But the Revenant crew were supposed to get a lot more buffs in the errata.
Oh, really?
And then I playtested the Fiend Force with Souls a couple times, and they all got cut.
We found the Revenant crew to be one of the best units in Krix, actually.
We liked them a lot, even before the errata, so we thought that was almost weird that they get buffed.
Well, I mean, they're one of those units that's really resilient against shooting, because you have to wipe the whole unit or they'll come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what the Fiend Force benefit is whenever they bring back guys, they bring back one additional guy.
That is.
So instead of just, it's now D3 plus one. Amazing. And then you get the Weapon Crews and Rengrave for free in the Fiend Force.
So then you will basically almost always get all the rifles back each turn.
Pretty much.
As long as you don't throw the one. But yeah. Nice, nice.
Yep, but it's still pretty weak to remove for play, because you can still get removed, so you can't bring them back. It also has not machine wraiths, well, they are in it, but wraith engines in it. So you can get Dark Shroud access there. It's a really cool theme force, and it's one of my favorites out of the new ones that just came out.
Nice.
Yeah, the wraith engine seems a lot stronger now than before, with the big point drop.
So a lot of people think that we just arbitrarily change point cost. Like, the Haley 1 I know has gotten a lot of flack.
I love that one.
I will tell you, I'm not going to comment too much on that one, because that's a can of worms that I don't really want to open, but things like that are done for a reason. And things like specifically how we change the point cost on the Wraith Engine and the Revenant crew all have purposes, and the number that changes is relevant. And you will notice that in this theme force specifically.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because that's the thing that you guys have information that we don't.
Tons of information. Like, yeah, I have 5 years worth of releases on my computer or something. Like, it's ridiculous how far out our schedule goes.
5 years. That's a long time. But I guess it's good now that you can actually change rules almost up until the point of release. I mean, that must be a big change, because before, as you said, then you had at least decided rules at least 6 months before or something.
Correct. And then if when we tease it, like, somebody does come up with something, like the Troll Theme Force, for example, had the takedown rule, which turned off a whole ton of rules for trolls.
That was hilarious.
We didn't. That's not what we wanted for that Theme Force, but we wanted to keep the effect. So we were able to change it in the errata, and in the future, that will get caught before the books go to print. So we can fix that basically in the books, because one of the big reasons that we knew we wanted to do more errata. We wanted to be able to change things. We wanted to be able to do that kind of stuff. And by pushing back when these things are printed, or by removing them entirely from the books, it lets us not invalidate our own printed material, essentially.
Yeah. So how will the new printing service work from PP?
So the print-on-demand stuff, we haven't figured out exactly which company we're going with for that, but essentially it's a third-party company where you can buy printed cards from that will be printed like our current cards.
Yeah.
So they'll be on cardstock, be the high-quality print jobs, they'll be full color.
Will there be some kind of European, or I guess other continent as well, version, or will you ship from the US?
I know they have been looking into a European option. I don't know any of the details, unfortunately. And I don't know if it will happen. I know it has been looked into, and I do not know one way or the other. I hope it happens. I think that would be great.
Yeah, if someone wants to play with cards, I don't know why.
I mean, sure. Like, I'm a big War Room guy, right? Like, and War Room 2 is very functional and in general works much better than War Room 1 ever did.
Yes. Compared to War Room 1, it's definitely the best app ever. But,
yeah.
I mean, we use it all the time as well. I actually don't play with cards since Mark 3 dropped. I did it all the time before, but I think War Room is strong enough now that you don't need it.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy to see the development that you guys are going with digital stuff and so on. I think it's a very good way.
Yeah, and I also think giving all the cards for free online will really help out newer players, because now you don't have to buy the War Room thing just to look at cards. You can get them all online on the webpage one. I want to say it'll be, should be whenever the community stuff starts. So March-ish is when all of the cards will be available.
Wait, all of the cards are going to be available online?
Yeah.
Correct.
I should know these things, right?
And can I also just say to the community, as someone who used to be a community member that didn't read Insiders, that is now on the inside and has to interact with community members that don't read Insiders, please read the Insiders. There's really good information in those that you need to know.
I usually read, Shane and Tech summary or
sure,
someone who can read it for me.
But there's so many questions that I answer on a daily basis that are inside of the Insiders.
Public service announcements from Luke Pagani. Read the Insiders.
Please. And I didn't before, and I will admit it. I was one of those people. But read them. They're there for a reason, and they have really good information.
Yeah, I agree.
Exactly. So, personally, do you have any lists or casters that you are excited to play for yourself, not as a playtester?
Sure. I can't say too much about it, but I really like the new faction. I'm really excited to play them, and they're really cool, really interesting, and really, really unique. So I'm very excited for that. I really like Strakov too. I know I'm just like teasing the crap out of you guys right now.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Personally, as an employee, I want to play this new thing and these other new models, and yeah.
Siege 3. But honestly, with his...
Siege 3, we're going to skip 2 and just jump right into 3.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. With his character colossal.
Honestly, I really love Ragnar and Trolls. Like, that guy is so good, and he does so much, and he's so fun. So, so fun. So that's, but like, I'm excited to get my models back and be able to play that guy again.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I actually played Ragnar last tournament and next tournament. So, I'm kind of agree.
Yeah.
As far as Trolls go, at least.
I think Trolls are in a pretty good spot right now. I know everybody's giving him crap online, but I like him a lot right now.
Yeah,
but that is a discussion.
We don't agree.
Yeah.
Perhaps with 5 years worth of releases.
Is there, and this might be a weird question to answer, but are some playtesters playing like one faction? Like, we have this player who is playtesting Trolls, and we have this player who's playtesting Circle, and like that?
No, that's not how we do it here.
No.
Everybody plays everything.
Yeah.
They found, because this was well before I was here, that when they had playtesters that focused on specific things, that it would create faction bias, and then people would try and buff their own faction or nerf other factions.
That was a bit what I was getting at. Or maybe that there was some player who was stronger than the others, and then that faction got weaker, or things like that.
No, that is not how that works.
Yeah.
How much of the time do you win all your games when you playtest, Will?
Well, a lot of the games that we play and playtest never really go to completion, because when we're trying to test a specific thing, we don't really need to play the last like turn or two of a steamroller, right? Like, if you're getting crushed, you know you're getting crushed. Like, you don't need to play out the next two turns when you're getting controlled out of the game or something.
Yeah,
but it does heavily depend on like what's being tested as well. And sometimes we will change model stats mid-game. Man, that guy's defense 14. That's really good. Maybe he should only be 13. Let's try that. Or whatever, right?
And then you just, then I kill everyone, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, and playtest games are very rarely about winning or losing. I'll tell you that right now.
That sounds good.
It's a very different mindset than my previous playtesting, when I was playtesting for tournament play. Because it's not like, this is the most optimal list I can build and I must crush your soul. It's, does this model function? Like, does it do what we want it to do? At the beginning, and then at the end, it is, can I crush your soul? Like, when we're months in on the model, it is now time to start doing the, how can I break this kind of stuff?
Yeah, and I mean...
first we want to get the model where it is, make it fun, make it playable, make it engaging, And then we want to see, is it broken? Is this too much?
That's one of the things I see when I heard that you were going to start working at PP. Just the fact that they're actually taking in someone who is a very good tournament player, tournament winner, to actually get in there and break all the stuff and take the optimal combos and so on. Do you feel
that? So that's a lot of my discussions are, can we get away with this?
Yeah. Right? Like, is it like, some... Do you have a different mindset from the other developers in that way? Where you come from a tournament background?
Probably. Because I'm constantly like, how does this play in scenarios? Is this going to completely like shut out an opponent? Is this going to kill everything it touches? Is this going to... like? I'm constantly thinking like that. And I can't ever not think like that. Because I've been doing it for so long that I probably do have a different point of view for most of the developers. I think that's a fair statement.
I
think that's one of the reasons they brought me in, right? Like, so that they can get another view on it from a different direction.
Exactly.
That's what we're hoping as well. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that you get to use that view that you have. I think a lot of the tournament players feel like you are basically representing us inside the development team.
I definitely get a lot of messages from a lot of people that are like, I'm excited. And I'm like, I hope I don't fuck it up. Oh, I can't say I hope I don't mess it up.
you can say whatever you want.
Yeah, we can swear how much we want. The reason we don't is just that we are polite people.
Sure. Well, I'm from Texas. I'm never polite.
No, exactly.
Yep.
Okay, awesome.
Do you have anything more to share or anything we missed so far?
No, we hit all the major bullet points on my list here.
Yeah.
So I think we're good.
Exactly. And we don't get flack from the marketing department for speaking of things we shouldn't speak about.
Yes. I'm sure I said something I shouldn't say, and excellent. I'll get yelled at. But that's fine. That's fine.
That's normal for podcasts after all.
I'm the new guy. Like, I have to get yelled at, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So we'll see you at the Iron Moot in August in Gothenburg.
Yes.
I really hope so. I'm going to try and make that happen. And I know I've got my shave bet with Andreas, so
yes,
if I don't show, I guess I'll shave my beard.
Yep.
You will.
Right.
I got to make that happen.
Yes, you do. You really got to make that happen. Thank you so very much for being on the podcast. It was really nice talking to you. And,
thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And thank you guys for having me, and hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Yeah,
definitely.
If I don't get yelled at too much.
Okay. Bye.
Really.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
This has been an episode of Moot Point. You can find us online at Twitter. I am at Slim Kruger.
And I'm at Joachim Rapp. You can also find Iron Moot's webpage, www.ironmoot.se, or on Twitter, @iron_moot.
Du är fantastisk och jag tänker bara tänka på det. Du är fantastisk
och jag tänker bara tänka på det. Dreams of saunas and Swedish men.